Susie Hartsfield.
That's fine.
She was in the hospital here, about a month ago.
Now, I don't know exactly who she is. The man that helps me on our farm, someone knows where she lives. But while you're in the area, you know, with your Empress.
Right.
And she has a sister, I've been told, that is near her age.
Mm-hmm.
But you may want to glance through it since you are here, and if, through the article you'll be referred to it. If you decide to go, I just have to refer you to my helper.
Your maid.
And he'll tell me, like he told me how to get to Florida or McMullen's house.
Right.
You know, and he hadn't been there nearly so many times as I.
But he could tell you
exactly how which dirt road and how many crossroads I passed, and to take the left when I got to the Y, and that was the description.
Well, one of the best sets of descriptions I ever had for directions to go somewhere, and again it was in the South, was, well, you just go out left on this dirt road here, and you go till you think you're lost, and then you go a little further than that, and there it is.
Way by that, I mean way out in the rural.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to go that far.
Way you get around.
Way
you did it from home either, but you still go out to these places where all the roads go like a maze every direction.
Maybe
close each other somewhere.
You could share with us some information about maybe some of the different ethnic groups that are kind of here in our region or in Jackson mm-hmm. County or something that you probably have a little knowledge of. I know you know something about the Creek Indians. And
right, well, the main, the largest ethnic groups, of course, that are in the Panhandle are Afro-Americans, Anglo-Americans, and then what's left of the Creek Indian Nation. And there are actually several people of that.
Are descendants of the Creeks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who are some of them, I wonder?
Well, there's one lady, Connie Palmer, who I think lived in Marianna, who is a basket maker.
What's her name?
Connie Palmer.
Yeah, we know. She comes in pretty good to check out
the little
school. I think she lives in Alpha. Yeah, she just retired, not too long ago.
Oh, she did retire.
And a lot of times,
she is a Creek descendant.
That's right. A lot of times what you'll notice with the Creek Indians, especially those that are in the Panhandle here, is that there was so much intermarriage that they don't look Indian. Mm-hmm. And they have had a lot of trouble with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group, the center really for that group is in Torch, Alabama, which is just over the line at Newark Atmore. A little place called Porch, Alabama. It's near Atmore. And it's just over the line from Davisville and near Escambia County in Florida.
Yeah.
Just like you step over the line.
There
is a large group of 400 or 500 Creeks that live there. Who have always, many of them are blue-eyed, blonde-haired, but they have always been sort of designated as being different. I mean, they still do some things. They're just different from other the people in the area.
Now, I was approached by a young man, I think Sarah might know him. He works at one of the correctional institutions, I think maybe it's ACI. No, younger man, who is a Creek Indian. And he's one of the, appointed by the governor to be on this council or whatever. Is it the Panhandle?
There's a governor's council on Indian Affairs.
For the Panhandle region or something. Anyway, he's involved in that because he was very interested in us getting some more information on specifically on Creek Indians.
One of the
because he's, there are children and people here that
one of the things that of course with this particular project is the concepts of how occupations and recreations in Florida work with each other in folk culture. So for example, like in the exhibit you'll see that fishing, Florida is very important in the occupation of fishing, sponge fishing, shrimping, net making, all the activities that surround that occupation. But also, it's a big place for sport fishing and for people who do just fishing as a hobby or fishing to, you know, just put a little more food on the table. Mm-hmm. It's going to rain?
It's the one. Don't let the women look.
Take a quick break here. Just like,
for instance, there's another one. And everything is, I'm originally from Tennessee, and everything's over yonder.
That's right, I'd forgotten that.
But you have Washington, D.C.
Which down here is the north.
Right.
But up there is the south.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
It's true.
Yeah,
yes.
Yes.
I'll tell you the one that really hit me when I got here, and still to this day, hey.
Yeah.
To me, hey is something you say when you want to get somebody's attention and you want to stop them or something.
It is just a greeting.
And just a greeting here. It's like, I walk in and Sarah says, hey. You know, hey, yeah.
When I heard that expression, you know what came to my mind? The hey, the horse's ease. That's what I thought. The horse's ease. You know, because you can say hello.
Yeah.
But you know, they say hey.
But hey is infused out. I mean, it's down this all the way from the Mississippi Valley area and on over from there. Mm-hmm. It is.
I had not noticed that in Central Florida.
You
really
don't
like,
know,
like,
and you don't notice it farther over from west of the Mississippi, but all through this section.
And another one is y'all.
Yeah. Oh yes, that's all. That's been the joke for ages, but it's still y'all.
Yeah. But now,
it's just
I've used that since I grew up with that.
Right.
Because of my mother, and I, to me, it always made sense if I wanted to say
you is one
or
of
I mean, y'all.
But now, here, do people say? I mean, I'm talking about Marianne now, or as I've learned to call it, Marianne.
Marianne.
I say Marianne.
Do people say if you want to say like a possessive, would you say let's go in your all's car?
Yeah.
Over in White Springs, I say you're all.
You're
all's car.
Yes,
now
that's how I would say that too.
You put it in there like it was YAWL apostrophe S, y'all's car. It's brilliant pronunciation.
But they're throwing in the R.
And the farther in sections of the northern section, it's U's instead of y'all.
And in Pittsburgh, my husband's just gotten a job up in Pittsburgh, so I've been going up, I'm about to be moving up there with him. But in Pittsburgh, they say Ewens.
Uh-huh.
Ewens.
Well, now I'm interested right there. I asked, how long have you been in this area working with folk?
For 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've got sand in my shoe.
That is right. You've been here long enough to have sand.
Now, does that include the time, were you in Alabama for a while, or is that why you were here? But
no, the 3.5 years is since I've been down here, but I also had done some time before. I had done some field work in southern Alabama about 10 years ago for several months. Mm-hmm. And I was around in Ozark and Dothan.
Because when we went to that saying at Pilgrim's Rest Church, these people recognized her from Alabama.
Yes, that was very strange. We walked in, it took us, Trish, I don't know whether she told you, it took us 2 hours to find this church because we kept getting to the wrong church and talking about dirt roads and everything else. And we finally walked in, and of course this thing had been going on for about 45 minutes to an hour already. We walked in and I almost fainted because half the people singing were people that I knew. Mm-hmm. And I just hadn't thought about it. Of course the folks from 20 miles up in Alabama would come down to this sing, but there they all were. And they said, why Miss Stars now? How, what are you doing here? Yeah. And I said,
you're doing very good.
You're good.
I know another one that just always interested me. It's a sister and brother stuff. Now, did you grow up with that? You know, here down here, the sister will refer to her as brother, or as we'll say, now, is that your brother? You know, go get your brother. Go tell brother to come for supper. Or brother, now you be good to sister.
No, I never remember that either from my, you know, I ever heard. Also, they use as titles. You know, that everybody in the South has a title. You're either uncle something or aunt something or miss something or cousin something or sister something or brother something. Yeah. I mean, it's very rare, especially, you know, for someone to talk about an older person with the first
that
name.
Using
you
a title.
Have to use something. You know, it's not polite.
Right.
And so,
you know, we were talking about
this too. Oh, definitely. You just did not speak of or to someone older than you, several years older than you, who say was even in late teens when you were a little tiny child, they were Miss or Mrs. or cousin or Mr. or something.
Mm-hmm. And well, because my mother still does it, she'll refer to someone as, you know, Cousin Eli or cousin Homer
your uncle, aunt, cousins. And if not, then you were Mr. and Mrs.
This boy,
doctor, whatever.
This boy I've been going out with, and he's got two children, boy, man. Yeah. Got two children, and they call him Miss Trish. Well, the little boy calls me Aunt Trish. He calls everybody aunt. He says he's got a lot of aunts. But anyway, it just cracked me up at first to hear this, because of course I'd never been called that before. And talking about the Creeks, it's interesting, these two kids, their mother was a descendant of Creek Indians, or her grandmother or great-grandmother was a full-blooded Creek Indian. It kind of shows in the kids to a certain extent, the color, they got a little darker, the eyes are kind of unusual. They aren't the dark eyes.
And she's definitely been, it still shows in the family. She definitely, this aunt, Age U, what we all call her, was such a character. She was short, with black hair, and very dark skin, with the very high cheekbones. An uncle of his had the very high cheekbones and some Indian features, though not really Indian, but there were several Indian features. And we've talked about it even in Joe, the skin color tone shows up. And I didn't know, but it didn't. Because Joe, when he starts to turn in summer, and he say that, you know, always would just get shiny dark brown. And that much of the, they all insist, the family insists, that much of the, you know, of the Indian ancestry came out because it's so different. The rest of the family are typically great Irish. You know, with a rather thin skin.
I get burning.
And Joe is the only one, I think, only one of the grandchildren, great-grandchildren, that it shows up that much.
One of the other kinds of folk tradition that people often don't recognize as being folk tradition are stories about people in your family. Not necessarily true stories, but stories that have just come down, you know, about characters, I mean, relatives who were real characters, like in my family. I mean, this is true. I had this Aunt Sophie, and she used to paint. She was a very eccentric woman, very intelligent woman. She was a dress designer, and she used to paint her fingernails alternating pink and blue. And, you know, and she was known for doing these absolutely weird things in our family, and everybody's got at least one Aunt Sophie story.
And
in every family, there's usually one or two, at least, people like that. You know, either somebody who was a magician, or somebody who frightened all the little kids in the family, or somebody who was just known as a, you know, a good storyteller or something like that, and a funny person. So, like, for example, when people collect folklore, when we go out and talk with people about folk traditions in their families, that's one of the things that you can always get people started on. You know, if you ask them something like, you know, did you ever hear of Paul Bunyan? Maybe they never did. But if you ask them, is there someone in your family that used to do really strange things.
That you'd like to tell you about.
That, yeah, right. You know, that are not too strange that you don't want to take. Yeah. Then you get people started talking. And this is one of the, you know, purposes of this program, too, is to get, you know, people to understand that they themselves would be able to go out if they were interested and talk to maybe older members of their own families, older members in their communities, like you were talking about, Susie Hartsfield, people who still have, you know, just this wealth of knowledge of things, both true and untrue, that are part of their heritage. And if we don't learn these things, who's going to learn it? Mm-hmm. You know, my grandmother, for example, knew all kinds of songs in Ukrainian, Russian, Yiddish. Well, I only learned maybe 4 or 5, but that's 4 or 5 more than anyone else in my family knows because I happen to be interested. Mm-hmm. She sang all the time, to the point where people would say, "Grandma, be quiet." And, you know, nobody really thought about the wealth of... Yes, or appreciated it.
Right.
And now she's gone, and that's it. You know, I mean, that generation is gone. And the same is true, you know, everywhere. It's not necessarily that you have to preserve everything in the world, but the things that mean something.
Right, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't, it's like if each person doesn't take it on themselves to find out and learn some of these things and pass them on down the line,
right,
then
they're gone. They don't want to go back.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let me ask if two references, if maybe if you contact them, your experience in the pandemic. Have you met Cecil Ryan Jr. in Tallahassee, who is a native of Marianna, and who has done a good bit of historical research on the early settlers of this particular area, and has done a good bit on the Indians, as I've understood. I don't know if we have any of his collection here or not. His mother was Janie Smith Ryan, who was supposed to have some of her works here now.
Okay, yes, I'm sure. I recognize that.
A family person, you know, and was full of some such traditions, you know, that were typical of our time.
One of the things I would just really like to see happen, and this is one of the sort of ulterior motives behind this whole project, is to get people in different communities around the state interested in doing maybe a very a collecting project of some kind, and get we also work through school systems. We have been doing several projects with public schools to work with teachers and get children interested in
this has been one of our UDC projects for the last several years, is to get the people, most of the people, of course, who are UDC members are quite elder now, some of them are the younger people, not too many of the young ones have been interested in the last few years, but we're trying to get them family stories that they have and histories and biographies or letters or collections of things that they have in their own family papers, getting them to have them copied and sent into the State Archives of it, because to preserve those individual
is there
stories,
a local,
you know,
archive or a local
human interest stories.
One here for Jackson County?
Yes.
They call
is there a local archive? Archive or,
yeah. Is there a local archive?
Not
no,
archive,
but
the nearest thing is a historical society.
Yeah, but,
they don't
have a museum or
no, they don't have a museum.
They have a state.
They have some collections and some records, and they put displays up in the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
The hope was, to be perfectly frank now, the Jackson County Heritage Association is the one that spearheaded the project for this public library.
Uh-huh.
And the hope of the committee that worked on that was that this room would be the beginning for an archive collection.
Right.
And that's the thought.
It's a nice collection in the Jackson, Tennessee. I have a cousin who's worked at the library there. She's even older than that. She's worked in and out of the library when she was history teacher for all of her life, ever since she was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And she is still over the Tennessee room in the Jackson room. And they have a tremendous collection. They bought a single city library.
Well, now, see, I kind of have a problem with this room, with some of the mishmash of stuff that's in here.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, if it, to me, if it's going to be, you know, a local history collection type of thing. But a lot of this just of the general Florida stuff could just go back out in the regular collection.
Well, we're trying and to have, hold it in here and you have need room. I don't think you need the space.
For the, yeah, well, that's
have this heritage room, you're going to have another room because now it has to be like for this, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's, we need meeting rooms. But,
I wanted to point out this, since we're talking about archives, this publication that we put together by doing just the kind of thing we're talking about, sending out questionnaires to public libraries, archives, historical societies all over the state. And then we put together a town-by-town listing of materials that specifically relate to folk culture. And we define folk culture very broadly to include local history, because a lot of times a diary of somebody will have a lot of not just factual reminiscences, but also stories, riddles, descriptions of processes. Like I know that there's a diary over in Jacksonville of some fellow who came down in 1869, and culture shock must have really been a problem for him because he wrote a wonderful diary. He was just fascinated with everything he saw. He described how cast net making was done, how boat building was done. He described what the black area of Jacksonville looked like at that time. He described what the fishing was like on the St. John's River. He described the foods he ate and what they did to him and all this kind of stuff. But that kind of diary, even though it's in the Florida History Collection in the Jacksonville Public Library, that diary is full of folkloric material, because all those things tell you what the lifestyle and the traditions of the area were all about. So that's why we included them here. And what we try to do too in the index is to give you like cross references, because sometimes you'll find that even maybe things on Mariana, there might be some things which found their way to some completely other place. It's not so true for the smaller places, but say for larger ones, you'll find materials about Tampa all over the place. You know, just because they were in people's personal libraries, mm-hmm. and they just donate the whole collection to wherever they happen to be when they retired. And so we tried to do a little bit of a cross-referencing index here. But, you know, the hope is that
they will know that have collected through the years.
We have a local high school history teacher that has instilled in lots of students a love and appreciation of local history. Now, he really deserves credit for that.
And Miss Roberta called her before him, because she started him and she hasn't.
The last time
he did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, have you even met him? Mm-hmm. All right, now that's something else we need right now.
Billy Grant.
I believe it.
Okay.
Oh, just
some
words.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I had to talk to him.
But I think Mr. McCall
working on this room.
A lot of
time
during
the
summer. University of West Florida.
Me? You can't know anything.
Right.
Keep up. I'm just thinking maybe I'd get him interested during the summer.
He sure.
I'd like to come in and help organize this room and keep it neat. Because we just got things are such a jumble. We can't find anything. And people come in and the genealogy stuff is all over us. And I need some of it was really
great. The other thing interesting in the packets
sort of makes some sense out of what should be here and what shouldn't be here. And
the other thing in the packets that's real useful for the kind of thing we've just been really talking about is this is how to collect folklore for people that don't know a whole lot about how to do it. And this Folk Life and Fieldwork is a very nice little guide that the Library of Congress has put together to, you know, to just so that if somebody wanted to start a project of some kind, even if the Historical Society did want to do a specifically folklore related collection project, go out and visit some of these people.
Yeah.
It's like even if you don't have if you don't have tape recorders, if you at least have a paper and pencil, and you can just and just go out and find out from people what some of the traditional beliefs in this area are about certain things. Like, for example, when I was talking to Mr. McMullen and Mr. Williams, I was asking them, did they ever know about planting by the sign? And was that something people did?
And by the moon, don't believe after the moon.
Right, well, and Mr. Williams gave me this wonderful description of oh yes, he said, absolutely, you have, if you're going to plant this crop, you plant it on the full moon, plant it on the new moon. And he gave me the explanation of why you need to do that. And because, of course, being from the north and from the city, I don't know.
Why did anybody say it?
No. So,
I don't know what the longest I've been in these areas, how that came grew up in the city.
It has to do but with how high really you want your crops to come. If you want to, if it's a crop that's supposed to grow tall, then, but not too tall, then you plant it on the full moon, because that will, then it will be a height to where you can reach the, the corn is a primary example. Whereas if it's something that grows low to the ground and you want it to come up as high as it can, you plant it on the new moon, so that it will have the best growing thing. And say peanuts are an example of that, where you want them to. To get up
now, a lot of people fish by the moon too.
Yeah, they
yes.
do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they
and
do.
And beans
the kind of
beans
fish you want
to be planted.
Yeah.
Berries
or
when
like
the moon wanes,
and he catches more fish on the decrease of the moon than he does on the increase of the moon.
He catches more fish
on the decrease of the moon. My husband commercial catfishes, and he'll catch more fish on the decrease of the moon than he will on the increase of the moon.
And, you know, on the one hand, you can say it's a superstition. On the other hand, you find commercial fishermen, you'll find, you know, farmers that use all kinds of petrochemicals and everything else, and they will
and
still
they
plant their corn, you know, when you're supposed to plant corn, because
that's
otherwise you're taking a chance on it not coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's an example of how, say, a folk tradition is part of an occupation and part of a lifestyle, and you
only grow up from experience of some kind.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Have you been from generation?
I guess I'm at that age where I'm realizing it, like in the kitchen or in the house or something, and doing something some way, and then I go to somebody else's house and I realize they're using a completely different kind of, you know, dish drainer, or they just are doing something completely different. Of course, now I'm in a different area, and I'm, you know, sometimes I'll notice I do them the same, and other things is totally different. I thought, now why do I do it this way? And you know, my mother did it this way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just, you know, I mean, I've never had a reason to do it any other way.
Yeah.
It worked. And that. But the little common things that you take for granted until you see somebody doing them differently.
That makes it interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One other question I've asked other people. Do you all know the expression hocus pocus?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is it? What do you do with it?
Well, in other words, it acts, it's, or at least the way we always use it as children, growing up, and I still, you know, kind of, is if by magic bring this to thee.
What's the full expression?
I don't know.
It's just
hocus
pocus.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody know
where it came from?
The full expression that I ever learned was hocus pocus domino hocus.
Oh yes,
yeah.
I've heard that, but
I had forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I asked my dad about it, if he knew anything, and he said that he thinks that it comes from the Middle Ages, believe it or not, that long ago.
Is it that
because it's a corruption or a sort of a, it's a mishearing of the words hoc est corpus domini, which means this is the body of Christ, the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the words that you say at the most magical part of a mass, when that's when the water changes to wine, that's when the wafer changes to flesh. You know? And so, of course, you know that all these folks that went to services in the Middle Ages who couldn't understand Latin would hear the priest
sing,
and that would be the one thing that they would all have to listen to, because that was the point when they were all up at the communion rail, and it was the magical time.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that
the
is
people,
as it
would,
by
that's right, that people would have just remembered that and then gone on and started using it. If it's magic in church, then it must be magic, period. And so if you want something magic to happen, that's what you say. And since it's come down to us, there may not be any Catholics among us in this room. I'm not, you know. But I learned that phrase. All kids in America probably know that phrase.
It was Hocus Pocus Dominocus.
That's right.
I have forgotten the Latin part of it.
And that, to me, that's one of the most interesting examples of something that must be over 1,000 years old.
Yeah.
But it's in our memories, every single one of us, even though you're from Washington, I'm from Connecticut, you're from Michigan, you're from the South.
You're from childhood, you heard this Hocus Pocus, and this is, it's mostly from using childhood.
That's right.
And now we're
our
children.
Yeah. Magicians or whatever use the term.
And it's just as sort of a final example of something that sort of pulls practically all people
together. For a long time.
You've read Glory of Jehovah's book on the other father. Mm-hmm. Of course, lots of us have felt a little bit critical of her for coming in and writing when maybe she wasn't thoroughly enough familiar with what, but at least she pointed out some of these traditions and folklores too.
Sometimes it takes somebody from the outside
to point it out to us,
because
and
to that person everything is new.
Yes,
you know,
and it aroused enough in some of us, you know, that we paid more attention or became more conscious of maybe the part that she didn't include or that sort of thing. So it served a good purpose on that.